And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I'm getting some vapors of Trudeau-mania in the room.
Oh, man.
Trudeau-mania 2?
Such a contact high down at Polycon this afternoon.
Need to check out the Politico page. There's some awesome photos on there.
Yeah, you got six photos of Trudeau on there, and you won't believe who I had to step on to get them.
No selfie? No selfie? Not yet. It's
I'm
coming.
A professional journalist, so I don't do selfies.
When he comes here, we'll get a picture.
Yeah,
you got
we'll
that,
see.
Justin? I know he's listening.
We know you're listening!
He's listening. He's in the limo. He's listening, for sure.
Well, we can always tell Lloyd when he's here in a couple weeks.
Yes.
Anyway, Open Sources is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today we will be talking about the Toronto branch of Black Lives Matter. They've stepped up their activism in recent weeks, but a couple of social faux pas seem to keep them from getting their message out and appreciated, so we'll address the eternal struggle. Is it the medium or is it the messengers? And Marshall McLuhan's going to come in and say, "You don't know who I am and
Marshall
know my work."
McLuhan. Anyway. Yes.
Then more tragedy on Canada's First Nations reserves as Attawapiskat has declared a state of emergency because of so many people there are attempting suicide, including nearly one person for every day in March. What can be done to address such grave concerns? And we'll be having Métis writer and activist Paul Smith join us to also talk about the Supreme Court ruling this morning that Métis people should be covered under the Indian Act. And then finally, we will talk about making money. Stephen Harper's telling Republicans how to do it. The federal justice minister is making it at $500 a head. And Kathleen Wynne's telling her ministers to stop doing it. So we'll address the difference between good fundraising and bad. But first, you heard of Stomping Tom, but this Tom was stomped last weekend.
Hello, folks. Sorry, I didn't start that. This is Tom Mulcair.
I do feel sorry for Tom Mulcair, though. He was unceremoniously shown the door last weekend in Edmonton at the NDP convention. The vote wasn't even close. He said he was going to stay if he got 70% or more. 52% said they wanted him to go. So there's a leadership race now. There's two leadership races, one for the Conservatives and one for the NDP. But I got to tell you, there seems to be... I think this is going to be trickier than the Conservative one, because on the one hand you have the people who are for the Leap Manifesto going ultra-left-wing, ultra-lefty, people like Avi Lewis and Peggy Nash, Naomi Klein. And then on the other hand you have Rachel Notley, who a lot of people are saying could be a potential leadership candidate, but she called the Leap Manifesto naive, ill-informed, and tone-deaf. And... you know, you're probably not going to have too much of an easier time bringing the party together if you have Rachel Notley calling one half of the party naive and tone deaf.
Quite the convention and quite the rough weekend for Mulcair. And yet, somehow, It didn't seem so bad when Parliament reconvened there. He got some cheers.
Yeah.
And had a little presser afterwards, and they were... you know, the caucus was standing behind him. It was almost as if nothing had happened. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like he's going to stay on for a while as interim leader. After all that, on the weekend, it was after social media exploded, among other things, with what happened. It was very much business as usual this week, I think.
Yeah, that was weird.
Which was surprising. You know, there was a little... the grumbling goes on online. Like, this is... I believe Vice called it the schism. And I think they're right, because you are seeing the whole... you know, that we're blaming the, let's say, Alberta NDP, but the people that were sort of not anti-Leap Manifesto, but not necessarily on board. I just wanted to mention that they didn't adopt wholesale adoption of Leap Manifesto. Did not happen. What is happening is the motion that was passed was that they are going to review it, so which means it will go out to the ridings and riding associations. They're going to mull it over, and then they're going to hack it out at a future date. So it's not as if it was wholesale, like, yes, the manifesto was there. But it comes with pedigree. They, you know, I'm going to say they all love Naomi Klein, but, you know, she's a long time. When Jack Layton came to town all those years ago, she was one of the speakers. So there's definitely a connection there. And, of course, Avi Lewis is part of the royalty, pretty much, of the NDP.
He's the Prince William of the NDP.
Yes. So, yeah. Well, actually, that's a really good descriptor. for sure. Feeding a baby rhino. No, that's another story. Oh, look, they've got babies and they're rhinos. Yeah, but, and I guess with Notley too, I mean, you talk about being in the toughest place. It's pretty much going to be the only surviving NDP government in the country, and she can't exactly come out and say, oh, yes, we're going to get rid of the tar sands and that. There is so much pressure from Labour. Labour all sided with Mulcair. They wanted it, well, the majority of them, let's just say the large Labour groups wanted Mulcair because he was their man, and yet we see this from the grassroots. And the most interesting line of arguing I've seen online was between there's people saying, well, you know, it's not really fair because the convention only had certain people there, and if we all got to decide, we probably would have kept Mulcair, which I don't believe to be true in the slightest. But yeah, when you've been running your show that way for as long, I would think if the decision was a bit different, they probably wouldn't have that same line of argument, of course. But it's like, well, you know, it wasn't really fair because there was only certain people there. And the Toronto types, I can't remember the exact wording. It was actually out in the media, too. It's like the Toronto types were running the show. Abby Lewis didn't know anything about, you know, working a day in his life. Those kinds of lines of argument. But they're going to have to sort it out. They are going to have to find the unifier, whether it's among, you know, they will be among themselves, I think, that will close this gap between the left and the, we'll call it the left and the center left. There's a gaping hole there.
Yeah, it's...
You're going to fill it with solar panels, I don't know.
Be nice.
Possibly. They're out greening the greens. You're going to leap. It's definitely a leap.
Yeah, I was reading a lot on Rabble, actually. If there's, like, to get the good lefty perspective, I always go to Rabble.
Yeah, and NDP, too, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And Michael Lexer...
Mike Lexer, yeah.
Yeah, wrote that Mulcair failed on his own premises in every conceivable way. He represented a phony attempt to shift to the left. I mean, that's incredible that, you know, how quickly everything turns. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of Mulcair, but he was the face because they wanted to put on a face that said NDP is ready to govern. Mm-hmm. And Angry Grandpa said it. And it was a tremendous loss for sure because they were so close they could taste it. The polls were in their favor. The numbers were in their favor. The momentum was in their favor. And then at the end of the day, they finish their second best showing in history, but it's still a failure. And you know what? If the revolution was built on Jack, you have to admit, Mulcair did a pretty decent job of keeping that alive. Because you have to wonder if they had went with someone perhaps more to the Leap Manifesto perspective of things, how much that would have helped. Because I don't think it would have helped that much. It depends on a couple of things. Perhaps Trudeau might not have been able to get to the other side of the left wing for of Mulcair for things to matter. But I think this country is more predominantly centrist than a lot of people understand. And I think the Liberals, although they did have that left-wing shift on a number of progressive policies, a lot of people still see the Liberals as the party of the mushy middle. And a lot of conservative voters who might have been disenfranchised with Team Harper probably were more likely to go to Liberals than they were to NDP.
Absolutely, and I think that's definitely what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to know Michael Lexer, and his opinion has been consistent that, like, what he said about Mulcair, he has always said, and there is and he's a sometime listener, actually, so Michael, if you're listening, there you go, shout out to you in Etobicoke there. But this is the thing, in that analysis, I mean, there are so many factions, you know, they've always existed in the NDP.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to convention, especially one that's as critical as this in terms of who will the leader be, that's when all that surfaces. I mean, I happened to catch a bit of it. And when Mulcair started speaking, first of all, at one point there was a motion to sort of move his speech to nowhere near the vote. But that was from the Socialist Caucus. But there's even a caucus within the NDP called Socialists Against the Socialist Caucus. Like, that's how many schism divides there are within this party. It's incredible. I mean, people think there's various levels of conservative or whatever, you probably don't see it as much among the liberals.
No.
There's definitely a liberal left, and there's a liberal center and liberal right as well, like you said. And that's exactly it. But Mulcair was emotional, like crying emotional, when he started his speech. And that was a moment I thought, this is over for this guy. He was sensing something in the building that we weren't seeing. And the other thing, too, is I'm not sure how much of you watched on CPAC. Mm-hmm. I just happened to nail it, like, right when the speech happened. And there was this sort of rah-rah ovation going on in the front. But then I'm not sure if it was an accident, but they panned to a camera at the back, and everybody's just kind of sitting there.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, this guy's done. And this is unprecedented, too. I don't think people realize, like, Joe Clark, leftist conservative leader with 67% in favor. That was the previous worst result for the leader of a federal party in terms of a vote in terms of will he stay on or not.
Right.
This is a trounce.
Yeah. And it is surprising because the NDP isn't typically a leadership party. The Liberals and the Conservatives are definitely a leadership party where whoever is the leader matters. And we saw that recently with the Liberals, with Ignatieff and Dion. And we certainly saw that with the Conservatives the Alliance under
Stockwell.
Stockwell Day.
My man.
I was going to say Doris Day. it's under Stockwell Day.
Hmm.
And then we saw that with the Bloc Québécois. I can't remember who the leader of the Bloc Québécois was before the election, but they brought Gilles Doucette back for the election.
That's right. Good trivia question there for the politicos. who was that guy? No one. It wasn't even a guy. I don't know.
So there are a lot of parties that leaders matter. Not necessarily in the case of the NDP, where you could have leaders who sit there after election loss after election loss after election loss, because it's not about the man or woman. It's about the message. And here the NDP were saying firmly, avowing that this time it was the man. Mm-hmm. And what made it surprise, and you draw these parallels to what happened in Ontario in 2014 with Andrea Horvath. It was kind of the same thing. They were trying to make a play for the mushy middle, for the centrists, those huge front page ads in The Sun, amongst other things. And not only did they not gain seats, the Ontario NDP, they lost their power broker position because the Liberals came back with a majority, and they were locked out of Toronto. And there was a lot of the same criticisms of Andrea Horvath that there were of Tom Mulcair. But Andrea Horvath is still the leader of the Ontario NDP.
For now.
Well.
But this is the whole thing. The impression I get is that, and it's, we'll be backed up, that Mulcair was given the job to become the prime minister.
Essentially.
Whereas in the past, the NDP always, and they don't like this sometimes when people say this, the protest vote and a protest party, they refer to themselves as the conscience of the nation, right? Mm-hmm. And then the only time we've really seen any action from them, and I've said this before too, was early 60s, that minority with Pearson. That's when everything happened then. The things that we think of, Canadians, like, it wasn't a formal coalition, but, Douglas' NDP backed Pearson Liberals, and things happened. Medicare, you name it, right? That was it. That was their, as far as I'm concerned, their shining moment. Now, we have in Mulcair, they call it the inner prosecutor, right, where he does that. He did it so well.
Yeah.
In Parliament with Harper, just for nailing him every day. And I think that's what the big laugh was this week when he started doing it to Trudeau.
Yeah.
Everybody was kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, this is the new mode we're in.
Yeah.
The problem is it didn't translate on the outside. So you remove this guy from the courtroom, essentially. You remove him from Parliament, and he becomes this kind of – I didn't know where he was going in the election to the point where, like, I felt sort of uncomfortable for him at some points, especially in those debates where he was kind of like, well, that, what's the number? What's the number? And then Trudeau bangs him with 9. Yeah. I'll give you the number. Like, that's the TSN turning point, or the open sources turning point, whatever you want to call it, right? You can see that this isn't going anywhere. And interestingly, Ian Capstick, who was a NDP operative.
Yeah.
On PMP the other day, was talking about how horrifically run the campaign was. I mean, this is somebody from the inside saying this didn't go well.
Right.
And we saw shades of it with the provincial campaign, I think with Horvath, the whole sort of trying to appeal to the working class by having the ad in The Sun and that. But in actual fact, you're doing something else. And of course, the balanced budget thing. I definitely outflanked federally with Trudeau saying, oh, we're just going to do this. Yeah, we're going to run deficit. And of course, the deficit has turned out to be much more huge than even they said it was. So it's like they were outflanked, out everything pretty much, even though they are still, as far as I see, the contents of Parliament, possibly Canadians in terms of, you know.
Yeah, you know, I agree about Mulcair and the prosecutorial stance, but there were times where, I mean, I was always saying on the old show when everyone was going on, like, Mulcair's it, forget Trudeau. And I'm like, well, no, don't discount Trudeau.
No.
Don't think Mulcair's got it in the bag because, yeah, he looks good as a prosecutor. That's not going to translate to the campaign trail. And it absolutely did not. And you saw shades of this. Like, when he was testifying before parliamentary committee about the whole satellite office thing, he didn't like being questioned at all. And, you know, that's the thing about the system is if you're not the one asking the questions, you're the one answering the questions. And you got to look good. If you want to do the job of prime minister, you got to look good being the one answering the questions, not the one asking questions. And it is kind of sad because nobody was chanting his name. And you always see that at these kind of leadership conventions. But at the same time, he comes up in his speech and says, I helped bring down Harper by holding him account every day through these question periods. And it's funny you say in question period this week, he's kind of going back to that. But the thing about him saying that, it was like a tacit admission of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I held him to account. I held his feet to a fire. I was up there firing him of questions every day, and I still didn't win.
Yeah. But, I mean, looking to the future, there is a possibility, because it's not the same as the Conservatives, I don't think, that Mulcair could run.
Sure.
He potentially, it could be some kind of miraculous rising from the ashes.
Sure.
There's nothing to bar him from running for the leadership again. And, of course, there's a whole list of, we won't get into it because we're kind of out of time now, in terms of the candidates of the people that will potentially run. But there are lots and lots and lots. And I'm actually surprised that Megan Leslie are not doing it.
Well,
she's out of the picture. She said, I think she was unequivocal that she's not going to go.
Well, you never
know. And Brian Topp has also said he's not going to do it either.
Things
could change in 2 years.
To quote Face the Nation's John Dickerson, everybody says no till they say yes.
And with that.
Okay. There is a protest, an ongoing protest in Toronto involving Black Lives Matter Toronto. The case of Andrew Locu, who was a 45-year-old man who, armed with a hammer, was shot to death by Toronto police last July. He clearly had some mental health issues, and he had to look no further than the fact that he was shot to death inside the Canadian Mental Health Association building.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a tent city outside police headquarters. They did die-ins. They did sit-ins. They went to Queen's Park. And they've been getting good progress. The Ontario coroner announced yesterday there's going to be an inquest into Andrew Locu's death. But at the same time, you know, Black Lives Matter seems to, I call them social faux pas at the top, and it really does seem like social faux pas. And the most prominent case is the tweet of the Toronto Cole founder named Yusra, I'm going to get her name wrong, Kolgali, Yusra Kolgali.
Sure. Yusra's good, yeah.
Yeah, and kind of an angry tweet that she wrote in haste and anger in response to some people kind of trying to tweak her online. But, I mean, unfortunately, thanks to Jerry Agard, sort of become a white flag, I guess.
I happened to be in the car driving around when all this was going down, and Jerry Agard discovered this tweet. And it was all they talked about. And what really bugged me about it was somebody, and I can't remember who the commentator was, because I've said this before, I kind of try and listen to other talk radio to see how they do it. I don't necessarily agree with the opinions. And they're like, well, what about Desmond Cole? Well, what about Desmond Cole? Desmond Cole, friend of the show, has actually written an excellent article, is in the Star about this. And his the byline was, don't mistake a response to violence for violence itself. Important point, because Desmond Cole said this, but this is my metaphor, I guess. You got two people standing there with hammers.
Yeah.
If it's a white guy who happens to be a tradesperson or something, or it's a black woman at the Black Lives Matter protest, who is going to get taken down?
Mm.
Think in your mind, who is going to get taken down? It will be that person. Now, remember, if you think back, some of you, lots of you will remember why the SIU was created in the first place. In the late 80s, the same thing was happening in Toronto. Black men were being persecuted and killed. Lester Donaldson is the name. Lester Donaldson was the Andrew Locu of 19. I can't remember the exact date, but you go back in time. And beyond this, too, you can think along the lines of Sami Yateem, and I've written about this on the Spanner book as well, about people that won't drop the hammer or the scissors, just get shot.
Yeah.
Beyond the scope of them, just whatever their race or it generally is, people, you know, black or of a different ethnic persuasion. But so there's kind of dual issues going on there in terms of mental health issues, but also Black Lives Matter. But I think this is the way that you do it. Now, the premier had said that the inquests are sort of hands off politically. But I mean, it's one heck of a coincidence that Black Lives Matter is out front of the police station for a couple of weeks, and also were fairly harassed one night. I don't know if you've seen any of the footage of the cops just storming in, and probably not a good idea to have a fire out front.
No.
And they just came out and kind of stomped on them a bit, and then, you know, some coats got torn and stuff, but they stuck it out. Reinforcements came, and the premier spoke to them. Like, things did actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, it was peaceful. I mean, I there was no antagonism, unless the tweeting is considered antagonistic. And this, again, we've talked about this before on social media. People really, really need, if you are that high profile in an organization, right, you have to monitor yourself. I am of the mind that she didn't really mean what she said. I mean, I sort of get it, because I mean, I used to have neighbors like, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
That kind of thing. And I think that's where she's coming from on this. But taken at face value, when Jerry Agar,
yeah, out of context,
gets hold of it, it just becomes this. And that, and after that, from that point on, it was all they talked about.
Yeah.
It was it's just ridiculous and beyond the issue. It's like, well, it's reverse racism. You know, the usual crap.
I hate the term reverse racism.
Well, it's a non-starter. But that's how they parsed it, right? And it's like, God, will you guys move on with the conversation? And it was like, what about Desmond Cole? And this just kept going on. I was like, either I'm listening to this for too long, or they don't have anything else to say. Yeah, it's kind of like when you listen to the traffic report and it's the same every 10 minutes. You know, it's like,
still backed up on the 404. Yeah.
Black lives still matter. Yeah, or whatever. You know, what they do.
Yeah, it's... I will say that she didn't lend... I mean, she was pretty quiet for the first several days of this, and she could have just, I mean, she had deleted it beforehand. Somebody had like cached it or something.
Mm.
This tweet, and
that's it
when used it's it out for there, the right time.
It's out there. It's out
right,
there.
Because it was months old too, so it was like a bomb ready to drop at just the right time by Jerry Agar or one of
whoever.
Yeah,
some whoever. Of the. I mean, I had a look at the string of tweets, and some of the pure racists in there, I mean, far more horrible than what she said. Just awful, awful stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And they get away with it.
But she went radio silent right afterwards, saying, well, hold up. I was ticked. I wrote this in anger. I tweeted it like right away when I realized what I wrote. So, you know, I apologize. But no, she went radio silent. And then last weekend, she wrote what I thought was a fairly eloquent op-ed in the Toronto Star about the tweet, but it wasn't a response right away. And then the other incident that involved Black Lives Matter, and you're right, I mean, they were not treated with kid gloves.
No.
At a lot of these things, but they went to the premier's house, which I cannot get behind under any circumstance, and left like a wine bottle filled with water at the foot of the driveway.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, and so, you know, the Toronto police call the chemical unit, the biological unit, the radiological unit, the explosives unit, and they're just like, oh, we were just trying to be friendly, like have some wine and like talk about the situation with us. It's like, yeah, but it's security. And again, coming from the prime minister, just coming to a freaking bumper making plant in Guelph today, and you know, the
10,000 people,
five burly RCMP people, and you know, explosive sniffing dot. Like, that was a weird thing for me. Was they had us all?
Really? Was that?
Yeah. They had us all put our gear against a wall, and the dog sniffed our gear to make sure we weren't carrying anything.
You can't be too careful.
Yeah, you can't be too careful. But I mean,
it's touchy feely Guelph. But even so, yeah,
right. Like, yeah, the chances of something happening are slim. But you can't do that kind, pull that kind of stuff at the premiere at the premier's house.
Yeah, because the first thing I thought of when you said that was Molotov, right?
Probably the first thing they thought of.
Yeah.
The police. First thing the premier's partner thought of.
Just leave her a little teddy bear or something. Actually, don't leave anything. Don't. I mean, that.
Yeah.
It isn't the best move, because, I mean, they're well along making their point at police headquarters and at Queen's Park. I mean, those are the places where you do that, the public space. There is a line that needs to be drawn. And I'm thinking back to, I mean, No, I didn't really feel sorry for Rob Ford. That was journalists going after him. Get off my driveway, please.
Well, but, I think
that's a little bit different than
I think that went a
yeah.
Even looking back now, that went maybe a bit too far.
Hmm.
Rob Ford was actually being accused of something. Kathleen Wynne wasn't being charged. I think Kathleen Wynne wasn't being accused of shooting somebody.
No.
But then they went to Queen's Park several days later, and Kathleen Wynne actually came out and talked to them. And she was talking to a couple of the organizers, and she was being heckled. And it's like... I realize you're ticked off that it's taken this long to get Kathleen Wynne to, like, respond. But she didn't have to come out there.
And she agreed with them.
Yeah.
What was the comment? There is systemic racism in our society. Like that you're in agreement with them at this point.
So you have the Premier of Ontario coming out and talking. You're like, why are you taking so long? When she could have said, like, release the hounds.
But then that's – she got some flack from Mike McCormick, the police union, among other people as well.
Well, there
was that motion at Toronto City Hall about the two – what was it? To examine – looking at through an anti-black racism lens via the police, like, so they need to pretty much saying to the police that they have to get their act together, and the union, and I'm sure a lot of the police didn't take too kindly to that, although it's completely accurate, in my view. It has worked to some degree. The inquest is happening, which was one of their requests.
Yeah.
And through that, I think the names of the officers will probably come out. There was three demands. It was the release the names of the officers that shot Andrew Locu, release the video footage from the apartment building, which seems to have magically disappeared, because normally things like this is like, whoa, here's the – no, it's gone. And commit to the end of the practice of carding, which is probably – which they have already committed to, I believe. But obviously it's still happening. And John Tory is – somewhere else. Was he in China or something?
He's in Hong Kong.
He's probably in Hong Kong. I'm glad I'm over here.
Yeah.
So, but at least, you know, things happened, and though there is whining about this, like, well, these people always get what they want. It's like, you have the right to peacefully protest in this nation, and if things happen, things happen. If they don't, and interestingly, because we're going to get into it after the break, what I found impressive in the past couple days was that Black Lives Matter people have joined the people that are occupying the Indigenous Affairs office in Toronto in solidarity. Now, that's a small group. I think we're going to talk about it in a bit. But I just wanted to mention that. It's like there is crossover there because the issues are the same. They see it that way. And when you see this sort of joining together groups with a similar purpose, that's always very interesting. So it's not that everybody's in their own little silo where it's Black or Indigenous. There is crossover now, and that to me is huge.
Yeah, that's definitely positive way to look at it. And we are going to get into it after a break. If there's one group of people who need to protest stringently about systemic racism in society, it is our First Nations people. And we're going to get into that after the break. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
My name is Maheen, and you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
That was Eric Landry from a fantastic collection in station here, Native North Americans, Volume 1. That song was called Out of the Blue, as his perspective on settlers, pretty much. And because he's from up in the area we're going to be talking about, I think he's on Moose Factory Island, I believe, in his bio. And he said in the song, "You ain't seen Canada yet." And I think anybody who hasn't been to like the real north, I mean, beyond Barrie or Sudbury, definitely has not
cottage country.
Not cottage country has definitely not seen Canada yet. And it is a completely different planet, as we are going to talk about.
Yes, and to help us navigate that planet, we're going to welcome back friend of the show, Paul Smith, Métis writer and activist. Paul, how are you today?
Good. Very good. Thank you. And glad to hear the Trocadero piece. I missed that.
Some traditions don't change.
It's an oldie but goldie. So, Paul, it's good day to be Métis because the Supreme Court has ruled that you guys are legit Indigenous people.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a big day. It started back in 1999. Harry Daniels launched this case with a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Daniels, he's a friend of my uncle's in Winnipeg, in fact. And anyway, it went through all the courts, and the courts upheld the decisions, and the Supreme Court essentially upheld a number of the pieces. And it's not, there's a lot of loose thinking about it. It doesn't give Métis and non-status Indians a status card. That's really, it doesn't do that whatsoever. This mm-hmm. is about the jurisdiction. It's kind of a narrow legal issue, but it has lots of consequences. So the narrow legal issue in the sense of the feds have always been saying, oh, we don't have jurisdiction over the Métis and non-status Indians under Section 91 of the Constitution Act, so we don't have any responsibilities. So that's why Harry Daniels and
did we lose Paul? Oh, there
he
is.
He's still there, yeah.
Okay.
Thought we lost you, Paul. Sorry about that.
Oh, was I prattling on?
No. There was a bit of a dip there, but it's okay. So I kind of missed the story because I've been, you know, doing whatever today. But have I got it right? I probably don't have this right at all, but is the impression I get is, will it create just sort of one giant band of Indigenous people that don't fit the sort of, let's say, the reserve model or band model or, say, different, say, Ojibwe or Cree or whatever? How have they even done the sort of finer print on this, is how that's going to happen? Is it just one great body of everybody else who is Indigenous identified in Canada? What's the breakdown on that?
Well, as they say, it's sort of a narrow interpretation of one section of the Constitution Act that talks about Indians and lands reserved for Indians. And, you know, that was written in 1867, so when they weren't thinking too hard about this. So they weren't thinking about the Métis or the Inuit, in fact. And so the courts really just said, you know, the federal government, you have responsibility for these folks as well as, you know, status Indians. You have a responsibility for Métis and non-status and Inuit. And those are all Canada's Aboriginal peoples. And they use those words because those words are in the Constitution. And so you have to, and they also said you have to negotiate because that's a given.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a trust responsibility with them. They said that's, we know that already, so we don't have to say that again. So it's really said, made the federal government responsible for it. And also said that the provinces, so the provinces are, so the way back a long time ago, the Alberta in the 1930s passed legislation on the Métis, and that still stands, so the court said that's still okay. So they took action under, I would say, the first socialist government in Canada was in Alberta, and that's something they did way back when.
How times change. So we were also going to dedicate this time this week to talk about Attawapiskat, Paul, and I know you probably have some strong opinions about what's going on up there, but in terms of the kind of drastic situation there, we're talking about nearly 120 suicide attempts since September. We've heard a lot in the media about potential causes, but from your point of view, what is going on up there? What has been going on lately?
Well, it's a tragic situation, and Charlie Angus has done a great job of bringing it forward and publicizing it, and the chief has declared a state of emergency, and it has a very deep roots in all of the stuff that we've been talking about ever since the Truth and Reconciliation Commission reported last year, and we finally got public attention about it. And these sorts of, you know, the suicide epidemic is really a manifestation of the long-term marginalization of people, right? So it's poverty, discrimination, the residential schools, mm-hmm. resulting intergenerational trauma, and the underfunding of services like schools and child welfare and policing and all those things, they all have converged and resulted, and this is not the only manifestation. It's, you know, the high incarceration rates and low graduation rates, all those sorts of things have, and Attawapiskat is just a prime example right now, and it's a tragic example. There's another First Nation in northern Manitoba, the same thing, they've declared a state of emergency as well. And there was a great piece in the Globe this morning by Nathan Obud, he's an Inuit leader, national Inuit leader. He, again, explains it all in these terms as well. That this is how it comes to be. And it's not, there's nothing easy to understand if you take off your, you know, everyday lens and look at it, because this is a similar pattern to African Americans. And if you look at the Australian Indigenous peoples or the New Zealand Maori, the same kind of social situations give the same conditions and arise. You know, you get these predilections to suicide and the high incarceration rates. It's a symptom of marginalization and oppression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Charlie Angus Paul, because I've actually started reading his book, Children of the Broken Treaty, and like you say, it sounds like this is, you know, from day one of the Indian Act, which I think is 140 years old this year, the 1876. The Indian Act
was 140 years old the other day.
The other day. I knew it was recently on the radar. I just happened to be reading this book. And but, you know, saying all along the same lines too, but the interesting thing is, of all the – I've been on this station a while, and I've been on a lot of shows. And every time this comes up, and it comes up regularly, the discussion is always the same. And Pam Palmiter said something very interesting the other day, saying that the best thing that they can do, and she means the government and everybody else, is stop doing what they always do. Do you think we're going to see a sea change? I mean, Trudeau is supposed to be I would call him the Indigenous Prime Minister. There's high hopes for him. He's been in the community. He's been in the AFN. And if I understand it right, made an honorary chief of some of the headdress on. So there's a sign there that he's going to be the guy that's going to fix this. But yet we see this, and that I didn't even realize that suicide pact this on Monday was a second one. This is on top of the people, the kids that have already been hospitalized. What kind of desperation is going on up there that this just continuously? It's like a domino effect. And yet, you know, counselors and that have gone up there.
Mm-hmm.
But counselors have gone up there before. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Attawapiskat has been in the news a number of times over the years. And the if you remember back to Shannon's dream, the desire for a school there, a better school, and that's Charlie Angus was involved in that too. Shannon Kuskin was a champion for a new school that was finally built, you know, after she died up there a couple of years ago. So that must have been 6 or 7 years ago. So it's been a source of activism as well to try to address these issues. And then the last time Attawapiskat was in the news, you know, it was Teresa Spence versus Stephen Harper.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got, you can see the contrast in reaction between the federal governments this time. So the last time, it was Stephen Harper standing up saying, well, we're pouring millions of dollars into there. What's wrong with the place, right? This time, you do have a sea change. You have Trudeau, who is responding. He is a sea change from Stephen Harper. And there are lots of good indications. It's all hope at this point, of course. You know, there's $8.5 billion more in the budget for various, you know, water, clean water, you know, funding for education and so on. So there is great hope that this will be a sea change. And I think, you know, all the other signals are such that there will be a major change. And but this is going to take a long time. This is a generational, you know, it's taken many generations to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll take a long time. But we can see there's a big shift, you know. And reflecting on the budget, if you go back to 2006 when Paul Martin was Prime Minister, he hammered out the Kelowna Accord with Aboriginal organizations and the premiers, which was going to be a long-term plan to close the gap in social indicators between non-Aboriginal and Aboriginal peoples.
Right.
And that was abandoned by Stephen Harper. And so essentially what's come back in this budget is and funding models. So it's really 10 lost years. And I heard Perry Bellegarde, the AFN chief, speak at in Waterloo a week or so ago, and that's what he said. There was 10 lost years, right, where nothing happened,
right,
essentially. It was stonewalled for 10 years, and now we can start to make progress again under a new regime.
Well, so. I think a lot of people are watching the situation and hoping that, yeah, we can make progress this time. But, Paul, we know you have to go, but we appreciate you taking the time to call in today. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Take care.
And that was Paul Smith. He's a Métis writer and activist, and I'm glad that despite of the horribleness up north, he's hopeful that the Trudeau government is going to be able to do something about it. Although I'm struggling with, we want short-term solutions, or we want immediate solutions, and I don't know if that's possible, because we kind of leap or lurch from these one tragedy to another. And when you hear the Attawapiskat kids with like what they want to see in their community, and things like stuff to do, they want a library, they want a cinema, they want like a bowling alley, like just something to do.
And that sounds simple enough, and there should be no reason in the world as to why those things can't happen up there when you've got a diamond mine pulling $300 million a year worth of diamonds out next door.
Yeah.
You know, they do have a trust fund for the people of Attawapiskat and in that area, but it just ain't working, folks. But beyond that, too, Joseph Boyden, great article in Maclean's, please check it out. And he talks about it's not just trauma up there. There is an intergenerational trauma that began in 1876 and has gone on to this day where, and this is what Angus talks about in his book too, the whole residential school situation. It is absolutely heartbreaking. And you don't just wake up one day and get over that.
No.
It doesn't just disappear. It's not like, you know, that kind of thing is with you for life, and it's deep, and it is going to take time, as Paul said, hopefully not, you know, the length of time that we're talking about in terms of another generation. I would hope things would happen faster than that, but
yeah,
we shall see. I hope, you know, there will come a time where we're doing the show and we don't have to have this conversation.
That would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna shift from there. I just want to say too, during Lloyd Longfield's town hall about the budget last week, somebody said we should have something similar in Guelph about First Nations issues, and he said, like, yeah, he's been talking to Carolyn Bennett about maybe doing one, and so I sent that tweet out that, like, yeah, we're here, Carolyn Bennett might come down, and she retweeted that and responded to it.
Wonderful.
So maybe that'll happen in the near future, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bit of a humble brag on my part, I apologize.
No, it's great. Information is
like,
good.
I'm, like, tight friends with Carolyn Bennett now. No. Anyway. We're going to talk about
tweet about having her on. Sorry, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Fundraising. That's been making the news a lot this week, though not as serious an issue as what's been going on in Attawapiskat. It's still kind of serious because we're talking about access here and the perceived notion that perhaps people with money are getting better access to people and the government. And that's certainly been the argument leveled against Kathleen Wynne and her cabinet ministers, who had fundraising goals to achieve, although it was funny how quickly we're going to have legislation about fundraising rules and campaigning as soon as this kind of hit the fan. I mean, I like Kathleen Wynne, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's if you're not doing anything wrong, why are you reacting so quickly? Like you put your hand on a stove that's been on for an hour. It's nuts. It's like you weren't doing anything wrong. No. We're going to take it back. Take it back. We're not going to do it no more. Anyway.
But the coffers are probably a bit full. Now, I know we're not talking about Koch brothers' level of fundraising or let's say influence peddling, whatever. But
yeah,
some of the numbers are pretty amazing. Like there's that by-election loophole. And the Whitby Oshawa by-election generated, I think it was like $1.6 million. We're sort of interchanging federal and provincial here.
Yeah. Right?
But that much money was generated. Who were some of the donors for this by-election in Whitby Oshawa? Barrick Gold, Canadian Pharmacists Association, Greater Toronto Airports Authority, which sort of makes sense. Real Estate Association of Ontario makes sense. TD Bank, there's a laundry list of people donating to this. Sorry, I said people, not people, corporations and corporate interests.
Mm.
You cannot tell me that this isn't to buy some sort of influence.
And it's crazy for a
can't say that.
Yeah, it's a provincial by-election wherein no power is going to shift hands.
Yeah, so it's filling the bank account.
Yeah.
That's all that it does, because you can only spend a certain amount on a by-election, same as you can only spend a certain amount in the federal election. And as we've seen, I was in the Trib last week about the amount of spending that went on. And I'm not suggesting anything illegitimate went on, Guelph, an incredible amount of money was spent on the candidates in Guelph. Gord Miller was he the top? No, Lloyd was the top.
Lloyd, I think.
I've got
Lloyd
it backwards.
Was the top, and Gordon was the second.
Gord Miller was. Or a fourth. I have fourth here. But anyway, they're both on the top 10 list of money spent.
In the country.
Yes. And some of that money is reimbursed by Elections Canada. So they've spent this money, but they will get it back. And it's, you know, it sounds like the donations system needs a bit of a shakeup in that respect. And one of the things that's been suggested is that, as it was before the Harper government got rid of it, is that the people should pay. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that either. Like, every vote equals a certain amount of money, a couple of bucks. And then you generate that amount of money, and that way it's independent of this other influence or perceived influence. But at the federal level, too, we saw it this week, the Jody Wilson-Raybould, the $500 plate fundraiser at a law firm called Tories, which if there isn't any irony in that, I don't know what's going on. But she said she was there as a regular MP. But you know, you don't turn off your portfolio.
No,
I was just there as a guy. You know, I was just there as a whatever. I mean, you go to things as a reporter, and then you go to things just sort of as a guy. But you know, the reporter's still there, right? I'm just saying about you, and I know you're not trying to raise money from anybody, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Well, yeah, it's true. If
you
I
don't
was
turn
at
up.
A, like, there's this thing down at 10 Carden Street to celebrate them buying the new space, and if I bump into, just off the top of my head, Mark McKinnon there, and he starts, like, he's had a few drinks and starts talking about how horrible certain people in City Hall are, and he doesn't say, and if he doesn't preface this with this is off the record, then yeah, that's legit. I can still roll with that.
He's tweeting right now, I do not touch alcohol of any kind. You know,
not that I'm saying that Mark McKinnon has loose lips when he's been drinking. But just, yeah, it's sometimes hard to separate the hats. And yeah, and this is the point. Patrick Brown, who's been actually fairly impressing me the last couple of weeks. He came out at the PC convention in Ottawa and said, climate change is legit, and let's talk about how we can address it. And yeah,
you didn't see the expression on my Facebook.
It happened.
We need a camera in here.
I did a weekender about it. I did a weekender about it.
Did my Scooby-Doo face.
Yeah. and then he points out, like, look, he pretty much said your point that, yeah, you know, your people are going to these fundraising events.
Hang on. Patrick Brown and I made the same point.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What's happening to me?
It's like, yeah, how are
or him for that matter.
But yeah, it's like, how are people supposed to distinguish that this is a person fundraising and this is like you're
yeah,
having dinner with somebody who's in a position of authority?
Like, the he's one to talk. He's a federal conservative MP, and they've got the only guy that's been to jail for breaking election spending laws, right? The manacles, the shackles, or, you know, Shelley Glover having that party at her house for the arts community. Like, here, it was like a pass the hat kind of thing.
Some people in the conservative caucus in Ottawa were drawing those lines.
Yeah.
I can't remember who was grilling Wilson-Raybould about that. They were someone who was defending Shelley Glover at the same back day. I mean,
there's always somebody going to defend.
This is the way government sometimes works. It's like, don't do what we say, do what we do.
Yeah.
Or don't do what we do, do what we say. I admit that, yeah, Patrick Brown, and that was Kathleen Wynne's comeback, was that, so we're not supposed to fundraise at all? Well, you can do whatever you want to fundraise because you're in opposition. That hardly seems fair at all. So we're coming back with this.
If they're going to take a principal stand, he'd say, we are not going to do this. We are not taking corporate or union or money or third-party money.
Right.
And third parties is another realm, too, that's going to get tackled in this, too, in terms of third-party advertising during elections and how much they get to spend and say, whether it's a union or an independent organization or the Fraser Institute or you name it. Fraser Institute gets a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the unions. It's there are all these third parties. So they need to bring down the hammer and say, okay, this is how it's going to be. Because I think, if I've got it right, election advertising, that kind of thing, used to be fairly strict.
Yeah.
As to what they could do. It seems that it's a little bit bent now in terms of what they can kind of get away with.
Right.
But it all takes money. You want ad time, whether it's on this station or wherever. it takes money. So where does that come from? Does it come from the party members? Does it come from the people? Does it come from taxes? Or does it come from the mysterious gray money third parties?
Right. And we saw that in the last election. That's why it was called so early. Or a lot of people accusing Stephen Harper of calling that so early because the Conservatives had a big war chest that they could fund their own ads and thus stop anti-conservative groups from purchasing their own ads.
Stop the lefty gravy train.
Yeah. Right. So, there were a number of groups who were kind of lined up against Harper. But, I mean, that was the idea behind that. And speaking of Harper,
yeah.
I want to address this before we run out of time, because he was in Las Vegas, apparently not for the first time since he lost, because somebody posted, like, I bumped into Stephen Harper in Vegas, and we talked about hockey. Anyway.
Wow.
He was
hanging out.
He was hanging out with Sheldon Adelson. If you know anything about Sheldon Adelson, he owns Las Vegas casinos. He owns half of Macau, which is the Las Vegas of China.
Oh,
So he's
interesting.
So he's money, is what.
Yes.
To borrow an expression, money. He is money.
And is so he Panama paper kind of money, or?
Well, we haven't learned yet. Stephen Harper is there. It was technically an Israeli kind of politicians who are
oh goodness,
Israeli friendly.
This gets better.
And of course, Sheldon Adelson's a huge booster of Israel. So
they're going to put a casino in the West Bank.
I don't know about that, but this meeting was about unifying a divided party and fundraising from there. And I guess Stephen Harper had a lot to say about uniting the right.
I think it's just have slot machines right beside the ballot box, and they'll raise lots of money. So you get to vote twice if you win 3 sevens. I don't know.
Sheldon Adelson might not think that's a bad idea, but
it's all about the bucks.
It is funny, like when Stephen Harper makes news now, it's like him going to fundraisers.
If I'd have known that, I would have played Viva Las Vegas instead. But you know,
but
next
yeah,
time
it makes it just.
You figured Stephen Harper'd be doing something, right? He's awfully quiet.
Well, apparently he does show up for votes in Parliament, but he doesn't like show up for debates.
And he leaves out the back door by the dumpsters just because, right? Or, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I don't know.
I mean, he seems to be more on than people want to admit, you know, because he isn't on the front bench getting up and asking questions all the time. But he does show up for votes, which I guess is technically his job. But also, he seems to have a lot of, like, this is
something.
He doesn't
speak. Like, he's really taken a step back.
Well, remember when they used to go after Trudeau for not coming to Parliament and going on speaking tour? It's like, well, now he's. Speaking of, like, don't do as I do as I say. Now he's kind of doing that, going to Vegas and going.
Should be in Attawapiskat. I think the protesters are right. He should just go up there.
Trudeau or Harper?
Trudeau. Harper had no intention of going up there. He would go to those special things and anything to do with the Northern Rangers or whatever. He was into that, but he wouldn't go to those communities to save his life.
I would agree, and I wish there was some Q&A at this thing this afternoon, because I would have totally asked him about that. I would have said, like, it's really nice you came down to Guelph and Tour Magna and, like, rivet stuff, but, you know, there's a freaking crisis hundreds
which is what Harper used to do,
away.
And I berated him for, but the thing is, if there's no Q&A, you make Q&A. At least that's my approach.
Well, we'll have to make some Q&A next week.
That's why I shouldn't go. I'll get rolled by the Secret Service. Anyway.
We'll have to make some Q&A next week when Mike Schreiner's here. He's going to join us for Earth Day, and we're going to talk about environmental stuff for an hour. And then on the 28th, we will have Guelph MP Lloyd Longfield in. And maybe Scotty can get some stuff off his chest then.
And another thing. No, it won't happen. I promise I'll be calm.
Yeah, and we will have more special guests in over the next next several weeks. So you can learn all about that at opensourcesguelph.com, at Facebook, Open Sources Newswire, on Twitter, at @OS_Guelph. And, of course, you can download this episode and other episodes of the Guelph of Open Sources Guelph as a podcast on the Guelph Politicast channel. At Podbean, and you can find that at podbean.com/GuelphPoliticast. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.blogspot.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on the Facebook, and the spanner, my modest little spanner book completely blew up on the weekend.
It was huge.
Explosions.
It was huge.
I don't know if we'll ever see the likes of the bar graph going off the charts again, but you never know. I hope I can top it with something, but thank you all for reading, and I appreciate all feedback as well. So there's been some good, and I got a troll. You haven't made it until a troll shows up and starts berating your mere existence. So that's how it goes. So thanks, troll.
Yeah, thanks for trolling, Scotty. Yeah, if you want to continue to troll Scott, I'm just kidding.
So anyway, if you wonder why you're frozen out, you know now.
So we have DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour. It is DJ Sounds Good to Me previously on DJ Sounds Good to Me.
Yeah, it's a rebroadcast of an old show. Stacey couldn't make it today. But
anyway, and next week's Open Sources will be all new with Mike Schreiner. So be here next week, Thursday, 5 p.m., and we will see you then.